Eagles Entertainment.
Everything that move, I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time. Let's go.
Touchdown.
You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another day, and we're recapping the Eagles draft class as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 452. At the top of today's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Greg Cosell, my friend from NFL Films, to talk about the Philadelphia Eagles and their haul on draft weekend. Not just the draft choices, but obviously the veteran acquisition of running back DeAndre Swift, bringing another Philly native back home to the city of brotherly love. What went into all of these decisions from an X's and O's standpoint? We're going to get Greg's take there, both on the draft class and on the trade for DeAndre Swift. We'll do all of that in Chalk Talk. Before we get there, quick reminder, make sure you head on over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating, leave us a review. If you've got a question that you want answered about this team, I will tell you that over the course of the next few weeks and the coming months, we're going to have more and more episodes here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast feed, just kind of gearing back up towards training camp and towards the start of the NFL season. So you can be sure that you will hear more episodes coming. So if you've got a question about this Eagles team that you want answered, or if you just have a generic football question, an X's and O's, team building, whatever it is, leave it there in the podcast feed on Apple Podcast right there in the comment box, and we will answer it here on an upcoming episode. That said, let's get to Greg. It's time now for Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
All right, well, as promised, here's my friend Greg Cosell from NFL Films. And Greg, we were just talking off air that this is our last discussion between you and I for the 2023 right. NFL draft.
Well, last discussion, doing a podcast. I'm sure we'll actually have discussions, you know.
Yes. Look, it's going to be an interesting group to kind of look back on, right? Because widely viewed as one of the best draft weekends in the entire NFL, when you look at the quality of talent that the Eagles were able to acquire. And let's just start right at the top. Obviously, look, we could talk about the class as a whole, but I think a lot of this will be judged on the first round picks, as it normally is. And the Eagles jumped up one spot to go get Jalen Carter, a player that many viewed to be the best player in the class. You've given your note reviews on Jalen over on the Journey to the Draft podcast, but for some of our listeners who don't subscribe to that podcast, which wouldn't make any sense to me why you would subscribe to this one and not the other, but give us your thoughts on Jalen Carter and then ultimately how you think he fits here in Philadelphia.
I'll sort of answer that backwards. I think he fits extremely well because I think he fits in any defensive front. Yeah. You know, and obviously at Georgia, he played multiple D-line positions. You know, most probably saw him, Fran, you know, as a three technique type player, but he can do other things besides play three technique. He can line up in multiple spots. Look, the bottom line is you're dealing with a high level talent. I mean, he's got athleticism. He's got quickness. He's got explosiveness. He's got strength. He's got power. He's a disruptor. Everything about him is high level. There's nothing really you come away from his tape. You know, I struggle to really find a weakness in his tape. I mean, I, you know, you and I both nitpick a bit. So I did have a couple of things where I said, gee, I think he can do this a little better, or, you know, things he can work on. But there's really not a true weakness in his game. I mean, his hands are so strong, so heavy. How many times did we see him watching tape where he literally just moved 320-pound offensive linemen? You know, and we know how the Eagles play defense, and ultimately that's what we're talking about, how he fits with the Eagles. But he theoretically could play one technique. He could play three technique. He could play 4-I. There were times at Georgia he lined up as a wide nine pass rusher. Could he do that in Philly? Sure he could. We've seen Fletcher Cox do that through the years in Philly, and no one views him as a true defensive end. So I think Jalen Carter could literally play, with the exception maybe of the true Sam linebacker who drops into coverage, Hassan Reddick's position. I think he could play every other position along the defensive front if they chose to do that.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, since the draft, obviously, I've just kind of gone back through my notes on players, and I've shared some of those notes on Twitter and on social media. But, you know, one of the things when it comes to like the blue chip guys like a Jalen Carter, where it's kind of an easy study, right, quote unquote, an easy study of him. You know, I actually hadn't studied Jalen Carter from this year. Like I think the last time I watched it was like January. And, and I did obviously a full study from him last summer as well, but I only watched him twice because I don't need to do a ton of work on this player. This guy's a great player, right? He's a great talent. But one of the things that I wrote down, because I agree with everything you said from all the physical tools, one of the things that I hadn't really talked about on draft weekend that I wish that I had kind of brought up, you and I previously had discussed one of the things I loved about Eagles defensive tackle, former Eagles defensive tackle, Javon Hargrave, was his ability to kind of understand protections, which way an offensive lineman was going to slide, attacking that gap, and then kind of crossing face and making plays in the backfield. I actually saw that from Carter, not just this year, but also off his sophomore film as well. One of the highlights that, you know, it's on every single highlight reel from Jalen Carter this year, it was the play where he kind of knifed into the backfield and he picked up LSU quarterback Jaden Daniels. Like, he stopped in the backfield and lift him up. You could see in that one, he initially sets to the B, or like explodes and goes to the B gap and crosses his face into the play side A, and then knifes into the backfield. And I thought that was a really good example. So it's not just like the physical traits, but it's also like some of that savvy, which can be innate for some guys.
No question. I mean, I actually thought he was a very smart player. You know, and sometimes, you know, there's a difference between guys playing a game and what they do in other areas of their lives. But I thought he was a very smart player. You know, he can play in odd fronts. He can play in even fronts. He's just a really good player. You know, you certainly could make the argument. Obviously, quarterbacks are always picked higher than defensive linemen, but you certainly could make the argument that he was the best prospect in this draft.
Yeah, and when you make that argument, I think in any class, he would have been viewed as a top prospect, right? Because a lot of people looked at this class and said it was a little bit of a down year overall. But I think in any class, Jalen Carter is going to be viewed as a blue chip, like elite level player.
I agree.
And anytime you're picking that high in the draft, which if you're the Eagles, you're not expecting to be picking in that window, to take that swing on that player at that position, if you hit, I mean, the impact is so enormous. So, that's why, to me, like, that's just a huge addition here for this Eagles defense, a potential cornerstone player for the next decade if he's able to hit.
I couldn't agree more.
All right, well, let's go to the next one, because the Eagles, we're not done in round one. They get Jalen Carter's teammate in Nolan Smith. This was the player, for people that have been listening to the Journey of the Draft podcast, I have been extremely high on Nolan Smith going back to last summer. I know that he was a guy that you liked a lot watching this year as a senior as well, and he grew on you the more you watched.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing you notice with Nolan Smith, first of all, is he's just a freakish athlete. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal athlete. And the other thing you notice when you watch his tape is he was asked to do a lot of things in the context of Georgia's defense, which of course leads me to believe that he's a smart, intuitive player. And we know that he's a great kid. We've heard that all, you know, the last couple of years. So, and I think that shows up on tape. I think that ultimately I was fascinated watching him, Fran, for this reason. He's under 240 pounds. He plays stronger than that. He's a very good run player, and I thought he played with strong hands, but at the end of the day, he's still under 240 pounds. So I kept thinking to myself, okay, is he an on-the-ball edge player at the next level, or are some people going to look at him and think, oh, I want to move him to make him an off-the-ball linebacker? Because I know there are some former defensive coaches in this league that I've had a chance to hear their thoughts, and they thought he could be a phenomenal off-the-ball linebacker. I don't think the Eagles drafted him to be that, but I guess we'll never know. Because to me, you could easily make the argument that he fits the Hassan Reddick role perfectly. That's a Sam linebacker. Reddick predominantly was a pass rusher, but he did have 80, 90 snaps this year, somewhere in that range where he did drop into coverage. Smith obviously can do that. As I said, he's a really good run defender as well, probably better than Reddick is. And I think he's, while he has the ability certainly to bend and flatten his rush pass and rush the quarterback and even showed some speed to power, I think he needs to work on his pass rush traits, which I'm sure he will, and he'll be coached to do so. But, you know, there's a lot there with Nolan Smith, and I think he's an ascending player, and I'm so curious to watch his development.
Yeah, he's a guy that, you know, everything that you said, I totally agree with. He's the play strength is something that I feel like is underrated with him, not just against the run, but also having that power to push the pocket as well, especially when he's working with a runway, which he typically was coming off the edge. And I think that's the way he'll probably use here in Philadelphia as well. Just that his versatile skill set, everything he brings both on and off the field. You talked about the athleticism. I had put this out on Twitter earlier, actually put it out during the combine as well, but he's the heaviest player in the last 20 years of the combine to break 4.4 and jump at least 40 inches in the vert. The only other two players that did it, Greg, were DK Metcalf and Breece Hall. And so it just kind of gives you an idea of the athlete of Nolan Smith and, with what he can do from a physical standpoint. Yep. You pair that with the character. And I agree, like, if you're going to put one negative on him, you say he's not like a super refined rusher yet, like that rush skill, the rush plan, not all the way there. But it's, you know, what do we talk about so often is like the guys that have those A-plus traits and they also have A-plus character, you know, case in point, like a Jalen Hurts. You pair those two things together, you feel good about him reaching that ceiling.
No question. And don't forget, he wasn't solely used as a pass rusher. Right. So it's not as if he just every play, let's rush the quarterback. He was asked to do a lot of different things. So, you know, obviously he does need to develop a greater arsenal of pass rush moves. He probably knows that, and he'll be coached in that area. But, I am sure that when you and I don't know what the Eagles draft board exactly looked like, obviously, but I guarantee he was way higher than 30, and that's why they took him there.
Yeah, I think that at that point, because you would probably guess that they would have loved to make a move to trade down. But if when a player that you likely reportedly would have been happy to take in that 10 range or even after a short trade down, if he's available to you at 30, it's very likely that he was by far and away the best player on the board. It makes you safe to sit there and take that pick.
No question.
And I just love pairing that with Jalen Carter, knowing the value of this team places on the defensive front. You have some aging players on the roster already at those positions. So, a year or two from now, again, I think with Nolan Smith, you're saying the same thing you were saying about Carter, is that this is a potential cornerstone player for your franchise.
Yeah, and let's remember one thing. How do the Eagles view themselves philosophically as a team, which played out a year ago and is likely to play out again this year? They're going to throw the ball in the first half, score a lot of points, get ahead. So then what happens in the second half? We rush the quarterback because the other team has to throw to play. So just getting more and more D linemen who potentially can rush the quarterback like Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith. That's the way they see themselves. This makes perfect sense within the overall philosophy of how the Eagles want to play football.
Well, let's get into day two and talk further about this team's philosophy because, we know the value they place in the trenches along the offensive line as well. This is a team that lost starting right guard Isaac Seumalo in free agency. They lost their first swing guy in Andre Dillard in free agency. So the need was there to get an offensive lineman. And late in round two, the second pick of round three, rather, after a trade down, the Eagles selected Alabama's Tyler Steen. He was the left tackle for the Tide last year, previously a four-year starter at Vanderbilt. So he took advantage of the transfer portal and for the extra year, went to Alabama, who was second team all SEC this year on the left side.
Yeah, I really liked his tape. I mean, I didn't really know it. Obviously, I knew who he was. I watched the SEC every week, during the season on Saturdays. So I knew who he was, but I never studied him. And I didn't study him last year, but I watched, as we all did, I'm sure we watched a ton of Alabama over and over and over again because they always had so many guys. The only thing that he lacks, and it's my understanding, and you can answer this probably better, that they plan to move him to guard. And I guess that's due to 32 3/4-inch arms, which is kind of just a notch below what you'd like to have at the tackle position. And obviously he's not beating out Maialata or Lane Johnson, so he's not really in competition for a tackle spot. But I got to tell you, I really liked his tape. I thought he really understood how to compensate for having shorter arms. I thought he had really timely and efficient hand strikes. He proactively kept pass rushers from exploiting those shorter arms and getting inside of him into his chest, which, of course, you never want to have happen. But I thought that, he for the most part played really well. He was a consistent pass protector. He was efficient in his movement. He sealed the edge. I thought he was a quality prospect. Now, my guess is he's going to compete for the right guard starting position. And to my way of thinking, he could well win that job.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see, how that competition bears out this summer. I think when you look at Steen, I did like the tackle tape. I thought it was solid, and I thought that he had the ability to be like a high-level swing guy or, a potential starter down the line. But also watching at the Senior Bowl, and that's where he played a whole lot of guard. He played a lot of left guard down there in Mobile. Greg, I really liked the guard tape. And they did talk about that. It was like, that was just a good opportunity to be able to view him in that space in a position that he had not played before. But this is a kid that's fast off the ball. He can play low to high in the run game. He was used pretty well as a puller down there in Mobile. Also just his ability to recover inside. I mean, the tackle traits show up pretty well at guard.
I couldn't agree more. I thought it was a really good pick because, again, you know, I guess as we sit here today, Cam Jurgens is probably number one on the depth chart at right guard. But, you know, he's a guy that's probably not going to get a lot bigger because he went to Nebraska as a tight end and really had to bulk up just to, you know, get to being an offensive lineman, whereas Steen is 6'6", 321. And could you imagine him at right guard? Obviously, we know how great a player Kelsey is. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But other than that, this would be a huge offensive line. And I'm really curious to see him compete because I really liked his tackle tape.
Yeah, I made this point with Ross Tucker and Gabriella DiGiovanni on Eagles Draft Central after the pick. But, you know, you look at that Eagles offensive line, and it kind of brings me back to that quote from Howard Mudd, the former Eagles offensive line coach, where it's, you know, you don't find the offensive line finds you. And you obviously have Jordan Mailata, the converted rugby player, becoming an NFL player. Lane Johnson, who was a junior college quarterback, moved to defensive end, moved to tight end, then moved to offensive tackle. Jason Kelsey, a walk-on linebacker, moved to the offensive line. Cam Jurgens, converted tight end, who moved. And then you add Tyler Steen, who actually started his career as a defensive lineman at Vanderbilt before eventually moving to the offensive line. So just kind of finding those guys with traits that have that ability to develop, and you bring them into the building and continue to coach them up. That has been a hallmark of this organization. You know, we talk about Tyler Steen and how he had that opportunity to show off some things in Mobile that he didn't quite do in college. Well, that was the case with Sidney Brown as well from Illinois, the safety who Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni, they talked after the draft about, with Sidney Brown, you know, he was mainly a box player and kind of a nickel and box player at Illinois. So getting a chance to see him play vertically down the field, play a little bit more in coverage, play more in space down at the Senior Bowl, he fared pretty well in that test.
Yeah, and I guess that's what they saw because, you know, he was one of those guys where what he was asked to do at Illinois was play in the box and cover tight ends one on man to man. He actually covered tight ends really well. The question is, at 5'10", can that project to the NFL? But he actually covered tight ends really well. I remember watching the Iowa tape and thinking, God, he was all over Sam Laporta. You know, it was a tough afternoon for Laporta working against Sidney Brown. When the Eagles drafted him, I thought to myself, okay, if they're going to play a lot of quarters, you know, which I think they'll play a decent amount of that, you know, I think as a boundary safety playing in quarters coverage, he could do that. He did play some post safety at Illinois. He did play some two shell safety because Illinois played a lot of two man coverage on third down, and he was on the back end doing that. So there are snaps and reps with him playing on the back end, but as a box player, you know, I thought he needed a lot of work.
Yeah, I think that really when you see him at his best, one of my things that I just have written down is like this was his number one thing. His play personality. I mean, this guy just plays with his hair on fire. And that's kind of what you're banking on, right? A lot of those missed tackles, he just came in a little bit too hot and just did, you know, kind of fell off contact, was a little out of control. And as we often hear, you'll hear coaches and say, you know, and scouts and GMs say this all the time in press conferences, is you'd rather have to rein that back as opposed to try and coach that into a guy, right? So, and I think that's what you get with Sidney Brown.
He's an attitude guy. He's a tempo setting guy. He's aggressive. He's competitive on every snap. He plays with a physical edge. You love all that. And from what I gather, and you know this being in the building, he's supposed to be another phenomenal kid with everything you want, you know, in terms of a player. They'll have to work on some things, and we'll see. Look, I'm fascinated to see the safety competition this year. We're a long ways off from having that conversation, Fran, but I'm fascinated to see what the safety competition is going to be this year.
You know, to your point about the character, I will say, you know, just behind the scenes a little bit, obviously once a player is drafted by the Eagles, us on the production side, we're reaching out to the schools and saying, hey, can you get this footage, that footage, you know, try and share some assets that way. Everyone I've talked to from the University of Illinois is like, you are going to love Sidney Brown. He is awesome. Just a great guy to deal with. He's great in the locker room. He's great off the field, in the community, all of those things. So definitely sounds like a guy that matches it. I am scheduled to have Illinois head coach Brett Bielema on the show next week on the podcast here. So looking forward to catching up with Coach Bielema. Let's now go to the next pick here. And this happened early on day three. The Eagles did not have a fourth round pick. They trade into the round using next year's third round pick to make a trade, and they get Kelee Ringo, the corner from Georgia. Greg, I would say if you said a week ago that Kelee Ringo was going to fall to day three, you and I probably both would have been very surprised by that.
Well, I wouldn't have been, but that's okay.
See, that's what I get for speaking on your behalf.
Right. Look, Ringo is a testing measurables and traits player. So now, and that's why to me, where he got drafted was not a surprise. You know, he's 6'2", 207. His athletic testing measurables were really good. He ran a 4.36 40, which is ridiculous at 6'2", 207. So, you know, you're drafting the traits. He's clearly more comfortable and at his best playing press man. I thought he had some issues that need to be worked on playing off coverage. I know for a fact he's working with Richard Sherman right now, or has been, and that's a really good guy to work with because Richard Sherman was a master at playing off coverage, and Ring Oaks really struggled in off coverage. You know, one of the things, and I learned this from TJ Houshmandzadeh, he was speaking about receivers, but it's very true with corners as well, is sometimes guys who are fast have a tough time stopping, and he struggled to stop. So when he was playing off coverage, there were a lot of times you could see curls, out routes, you know, they were just caught in front of him, you know, easily because he just struggled to stop. But he's got phenomenal traits. He's obviously got a lot of experience at the highest level of college football. He's got a tremendous pedigree. As you know, he was the number one corner prospect coming out of high school. He went to high school in Arizona. Yep. I think he was a top five prospect overall or top 20 prospect overall. So you're dealing with a guy with great traits, a great pedigree that just needs to be coached up.
Yeah, and I think my big thing with Ringo, because I agree with you, and you remember back, it was only not even like 3 months ago, he was going in the top 10, top 15 of mock drafts. And at that point, I was like, man, like that just feels rich. Because I agree with you that the tape did not show a top 15, top 10 type of player, right? And so I expected there to be a little bit of a drop compared to what the mock draft said. That said, like when I looked at the profile of a, you know, nearly 6'2" corner, nearly 210 pounds with 4.3 speed, with that pedigree, 2 years starting at Georgia, and like the tape, yeah, like not top 10 quality, but like, you know, enough there to say like, okay, like you can work with this guy. I was shocked that a player with that profile fell to day three.
And I agree with you. Normally guys with that kind of profile do not fall. So I was being, I don't think I was being sarcastic, but I mean, let's put it this way. I wasn't surprised he ended up not being a top 50 pick. Like that didn't surprise me based on tape.
Right. It was like, to me, it's like almost goes back to like the Tariq Woolen discussion from a year ago where like Tariq Woolen, he fell to the fourth round, you know, to the Seattle Seahawks. He had a great year, but even like separating that, like Tariq Woolen had only played corner for a year. Right. So it was like, okay, like you understand why that profile falls. But I mean, Ringo falling, I was definitely a surprise to me when you consider that. So the Eagles make that move. They go and get Kelee Ringo. And honestly, I really like let's just talk about the fit in Philadelphia as well. You know, we don't know how much the scheme is going to change from like a back end coverage standpoint side of things from moving from Jonathan Gannon to Sean Desai. But when you talk about like the cornerback depth last year, that was a little bit of a question. If there was an injury to Bradberry or to Slay, you know, there were going to be questions there on the outside, on the boundary. Well, the Eagles go out, they sign Greedy Williams in free agency. You get another year out of Zach McPherson developing here in the NFL. And then you go and you draft Kelee Ringo. You feel a little bit better overall about the depth in that outside corner spot.
Yeah, and maybe I'm crazy, and unless I missed something in the last week and he was released, but I don't think so. I actually think Josh Jobe has a lot of good traits,
true,
too.
Yep. No doubt. And so that's another guy year two in the NFL.
I mean, but prior to his senior year or his last year at Alabama, a lot of people had Josh Jobe as a top 30 pick, too.
You right, know, that, yes.
So, I mean, I think he's got really good traits if they can be developed. And again, I don't know the players, so I don't know their work ethic, their approach. You know, I don't know that, but I think Jobe has really good traits as well.
All right, well, let's get to the next acquisition here because later on day three, the Eagles made a trade acquiring Detroit Lions running back DeAndre Swift, bringing a Philly kid back home, like I mentioned at the top of the podcast, Greg. But we've seen a little bit of DeAndre Swift here in the NFL, so there's not much projection into guessing what he can be. Now it's just plugging him into this Eagles offense.
I really like DeAndre Swift. When he came out of Georgia, I loved him. I thought he was almost a combination of, you know, not exact. I don't want people to think I'm saying he's either one of these guys exactly, but I thought he was sort of a combination of Dalvin Cook and Alvin Kamara in the way he could be deployed. Now, obviously, for whatever reason, it didn't work out in Detroit. They drafted a guy they think's better than DeAndre Swift and Jahmyr Gibbs. So, you know, I think he's a really talented guy. The key for him has been health and durability, but he's obviously not going to be asked to be a feature back here in Philly. He's going to be part of a committee. And I think he has great traits for what this offense demands of backs. He's a terrific receiver. He's a dynamic runner. I thought that was a great move and they didn't have to give much up at all to get him.
Yeah, what I like too is it's very comparable to what you and I will always say with like some of the strengths of Miles Sanders as a purely as a runner is, you know, what we would always say was like, all right, well, get Miles up to the second level, get him on the perimeter, like get he is a space player. That's where some of his best plays happen. So you look back earlier in his career with Miles, it was a lot of the draws, the traps, the whams, like getting him past the first level of the defense, like getting him past the defensive line and say, okay, now go and make people miss. When you go back and watch DeAndre Swift's best plays as a Lion, a lot of them were those kinds of plays. And I feel like that's like an apples for apples kind of comparison there.
Well, unfortunately, James Bradbury knows that DeAndre Swift can make second, you know, third level defenders miss.
Right.
So they can have that conversation. But no, I thought that was a great trade.
Yeah, and he obviously brings more pedigree as well as a pass catcher. What he can do, you know, be moved around the formation as a screen player. Obviously, there's a lot of value there, both as a route runner, as a pass catcher, all the above. So that's an extra element that Miles didn't necessarily bring.
No, I agree. When I saw that, the breaking news trade, you know, I was like, okay, what's happening? And then I heard it, and I'm like, wow, that's a really, really good move.
Well, Greg, we know that you spend a lot of time watching quarterbacks. So I want to get your thoughts here on Tanner McKee from Stanford. I don't believe you and I have talked about him yet. I'm going to check real quick to see if you and I talked about him on Journey of the Draft. We did not. So, yeah, I didn't think we did. I want to get your thoughts on Tanner McKee from Stanford.
You know, I watched him last summer because you know how it goes. Last summer, he was going to be a first-round pick.
Right.
So I watched a lot of games last summer, and then I watched six games, of 2022. You know, he's an interesting guy because at his core, he's a pure pocket quarterback.
Yep.
Now, at Stanford, they used him a lot on design boots. He actually threw the ball really well on design boots, but he's not a second reaction player. You know, so in the minds of a lot of people, they might think, OK, why is Tanner McKee picked by the Eagles? He's obviously not going to present to the defense what Jalen Hurts does, or if Marcus Mariota had to play, what he would present to the defense. But I'll tell you one thing, they ran a ton of RPOs at Stanford.
Yes.
And so, he's very comfortable with that element of offense. He's pretty nuanced and refined in his pocket traits. He's a good thrower, not a great thrower, but he knows where to go with the football. He's a ball distributor. He needs ultimately to be well protected and secure in the pocket. Everybody talks about system quarterback. And to me, what a system quarterback ultimately means is that the design of the pass game provides clear throws for the quarterback, whether it's the primary, secondary, or third read versus whatever the defensive coverage may be on that specific play. In other words, you're executing the system. And that's what McKee is. He executes the system, and he's pretty good at it.
Yeah, to me, like I when people bring up the him being alongside Jalen Hurts and Marcus Mariota and being different there, at the end of the day, like, I don't know. Like, I view Tanner McKee as a number two potential quarterback in the NFL, like as a backup quarterback.
And I would agree.
If you get that in the sixth round, regardless of whether or not he fits your scheme or not, like a backup quarterback is a valuable asset. So if they bring Tanner McKee in and he's deemed like worthy of being a backup QB, that is a valuable asset to get in the sixth round, like regardless of whether or not he fits the current structure of the offense. And so, I thought it was good value from that standpoint.
Yeah, no. And look, as we said, you know, obviously Stanford, it fell apart for them this past year.
Yep,
but
right.
You know, prior to that, they were a pretty good team. And as we both know, going back to last year at this time, you know, Tanner McKee was viewed by many as a potential first round pick.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the thing is, I think you get a guy that, as you mentioned, I agree with you. The way he manages the pocket is pretty good. His accuracy and touch were really impressive. I thought that was probably his most impressive trait was his touch to all three layers of the field, all three levels of the field. Good size kid, obviously a subpar athlete, not a guy that's going to create, like you mentioned, but I think there's plenty there to work with there in the sixth round. You watched Moro Ojomo, right? The defensive tackle from Texas.
I did watch Moro Ojomo.
Well, let's talk through this, because I will say when I was sitting at the desk in the studio, we were getting ready to go live when the Eagles made the selection, and Ross Tucker, he was messing with me afterwards. He would have thought that we just traded for A.J. Brown again with my reaction to making that pick in the seventh round.
I thought he was, better than a seventh round pick personally. There are a bunch of guys I thought that way in this draft, but I actually thought he was – arguably one of the better interior D tackle prospects in the draft.
I
mean, when I say that, I don't mean I should have been a first round pick, but I mean, this guy's got strength, power, quickness, movement. He's got great arm length. He maximized his arm length effectively. He knew how to use it with arm extension and quick shock, you know, sort of in that 6 to 10 inch area, Fran, where you shock a guy. I mean, that's where the strength and the power of your arms really come into play. I think he's scheme versatile, which is what the Eagles look for. He's not a great pass rusher at this point, but and he may never be one, but that's okay. But I thought he had the physical traits and the competitiveness to play meaningful snaps in the NFL in a rotation way. I mean, I kind of like the player based on his tape.
That's the thing, is that I feel like people look at the lack of production as a pass rusher and say, like, all right, like 5 sacks. And I agree with you. Like, that's the big knock I have looking at my notes, is it's almost going back to like Nolan Smith, is that like the rush plan, the rush skill, like not quite there. But he has pass rush traits like all day. It was just more of like the manner of like the production just was not right there. But
well, production, I find production to be fascinating. You know this as well as I do, Fran. Sorry to interrupt, but it just that's one of those things. Not you personally, but for people who don't watch tape and look, you know, you know what I do. I mean, I overdo it. Okay, I watch ridiculous amounts of tape, and when you're watching a defensive tackle, I find production to be almost meaningless at times. Okay, because you can watch a defensive tackle and you can look at a stat sheet and see one tackle and no sacks, and then you put the tape on and he can dominate the game, you know. So to me, interior defensive linemen, you have to watch tape, and very often you have to watch a lot of games. I ended up watching far more games of Texas than I thought I would. Now, they had Overshown as well, who went in the third round, I believe, to Dallas. So I ended up watching a lot of tape of Ejomo. And yes, he didn't have production in terms of numbers on a stat sheet, but he had plays, meaningful plays. And to me, that is, you know, people can say, well, he didn't sack the quarterback. I get that. But you know what? He still showed, as you said, traits. I don't think he's a high-level pass rusher at this point, but there's traits there to develop into that.
You know, I think that a guy that I had, you know, kind of in the same bucket as him was Adetamiwa Adebare from Northwestern, who a lot of people were talking about as a potential first-round pick. He did not go the first round. He fell to the early third round or early fourth round just because the tape, like, didn't quite match the testing results. But, I kind of look at Adebare and I look at Ejomo as very similar kind of players. I think when you look at him, there's a lot to like there from the upside standpoint and the run and the pass.
When I saw that pick, and I was not watching TV at the time, I think I was a little drafted out by that point. So I was, you know, I think I was maybe eating dinner or whatever I was doing, but I was not, I didn't have the TV on. I was like, wow, I really like that pick a lot because I like the player. You know, again, I don't do a draft board. I don't think you do a specific draft board either, you know, like some people do. You know, our buddy Dane Brugler does that and he does it exceptionally well. You know, I don't do that. But to me, he was better than a 7th round selection.
Yeah, he's a fascinating player. So I'm excited to see what he looks like once the pads come on here this summer. Greg, this is a great haul, and I appreciate you jumping on with us, taking some time to talk through this group here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. And we'll be talking to you in the coming weeks.
Hope so, Fran. Look forward to it always.